Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everyone. This is Anne-Marie Lockhart, and you are listening to Vox Poetica's 15 Minutes of Poetry Late Night Edition. This is, I think, the first time we've done an on-the-air at this particular... It might be the second time, but whatever. It's the first time I think we're going live. The last time we did this, I think, was a recorded version. But anyway, let's not get distracted by details. I have... Charles Clifford Brooks III, otherwise known as Cliff, with me tonight. Cliff, hi. Welcome to the show. Thank you for being here.
It's awesome to be here. Thank you for having me.
You are going to read us a poem. We talked about opening with a poem, so I would love to hear you read from your new book.
All right. The first poem I'm going to read is called Sunday Chicone. It's from Whirling Metaphysics, one of the two books within the publication. And Sunday Chicone, drinking absinthe outside the vortex, my friend buys lunch. Sinatra sings in a passing car as pink hair, street preachers, and we two lucid revelers step on the same sidewalk. Barely brushing the ground, traveling asphalt tributaries, trees thin, museums rise up. Stone carves itself into forms. Graffiti blurs into an urban pollock. Shop windows warp our reflections. Atlanta concrete greets us. Her face, many faces. Sot skyscrapers lose us among anthropology students. Homeless, squatting with styrofoam cups, don't accost us. We're happily ambivalent. Oozing around eye contact, invisible, a speck in the sea of this city. Crowds hush, air shimmers, pigeons burst upward. Sunday Chicone.
So now, all right, your new book. Tell us a little bit what I want to know first off is how does it feel to have this book published now?
It's cathartic and nerve-wracking at the same time, which seems to be my constant condition. the amount of years in Whirling Metaphysics and then the purging from the Draw Broken Eyes, it leaves me with a peace, you know, that I actually got into this trying to find that allows me to sleep and put my mind on other things. But then the nerve-wracking part comes with the public readings and talk of a tour schedule and answering questions from strangers who have really read my work and newspaper articles, interviews. So much of that book has been in my head alone for so long. It's just it's nerve-wracking to speak about it so openly with my shirt open.
Well, now tell us, because the first time I read the book, it was a while back now, and what I thought was interesting about it was its structure. So talk a little bit about the structure of this book and how it came to be structured this way.
Well, originally, the book began in 2002 when there was interest in my work, and I began to go through the poetry at that time, which I'd not done anything with. I'd never thought about a story or even a collection, and it spanned from really poems I'd written from age 18 to 35. And over those years, I've been working on it with different people to get it ready for publication. And so it's more of a finding myself, and then within it, it's just broken into different forms that I use to express different kinds of thoughts and love of music or ideas about nature. Then about the middle of January of last year, I was iced into my dad's house and I couldn't get out. And in those 4 days that I was there, the Draw Broken Eyes just came out in a torrent from things I'd gone through from 35 to 36, a very intense year of my life that really kind of showed the boy and then the young adult that, you know, grew into Broken Eyes from Whirling. When I talked about my book, The Draw Broken Eyes, to Gosley, who became my publisher. He wanted to see the work that was also in Whirling. And that same idea of the story of, you know, how I thought and how I came about and how I saw the world and just figuring myself out and how I fit into things So Who I Was and Broken Eyes was a single story, but it was still two very distinct stories, and so it couldn't be one entity. So we published them as two books in one because they fit so seamlessly that way. And that's really how, you know, one tells a much longer story, one tells a very poignant, sharp, focused story, and then how both of those, it was just it was a very clear decision, a very easy decision to publish them together in one book.
Yeah, and it works like that because there is, a, as you mentioned, a note of evolution there, but it is also, at the same time, very different conceptually. So I think that is exactly the way that needed to go. Now, tell us about the publishing process because, you know, you just mentioned that this collection began in 2002 and now here we are 10 years later. And it's complete in a very different form than you ever could have visualized it. But what was that like going through the whole let's get a publisher concept? Because I, you know, I know some of this story, but I think our listeners will find it really intriguing if you could tell it in your words.
About a year ago, an awesome friend in the writing and publishing community who also writes poetry mentioned John Gosley, and to me is, you know, is a point who might be interested in the kind of material that I wrote. And from the start, you know, from the first email, he was, you know, John Gosley was very straightforward and honest and practical about the whole thing. I didn't want to hear, we're going to make you rich and this is how we're going to do it. It's the brass tacks, the business side of it. But at the same time, he also being a poet, you know, pushed me to go into a place maybe I didn't want to or to, you know, to really to bring out to the page what I was saying. If I was going to say it, be brave enough to say it in earnest. And then never told me how, but, you know, directed me in a way to do it, you know. When I looked at them and we started talking about contracts and really things about serious about, you know, the Drop Broken Eyes, I looked at the Fjords Review, which is their the literary review journal associated with Gosley Press, and everything about it is high quality, and I couldn't see a reason not to. From the beginning, it was just a very fluid decision, very fluid process. I mean, and never had a reason to doubt it. I was very lucky, and really my first big standout in dealing with someone with that much clout.
And I think one of the cool things about it is it was your first published book, published collection, but it's also the first that John is doing under his name, under his imprint. And that's kind of cool, too, because the work he does at Fjords is, as you say, outstanding, you know, from a quality perspective. And but this is even a different branch out for him. So it seems right to me that it should be this for both of you. I think it's exactly the right thing. I think it works, that the relationship works, and that relationship between publisher and writer is critical. You know, you felt comfortable with him from the beginning. I think he felt comfortable with you in the same way, and the relationship was easy. So that's key. That right there is so key, and a lot of people don't know that when they start. But, you know, you felt that right away, and I think that was a huge plus.
No, I think, I mean, through experience, I mean, I have dealt with, you know, presses in the past that just did not live up to their words, you know. And, and so, I mean, John, you know, there's times where it's just like, I don't know where this paranoia is coming from. I was like, man, I've been hurt in the past. You don't understand, you know. And he was great in that regard, too. I'm fragile, you know. it was great. And he's a champ with dealing with that, you know, because – and going back through and the whole process of getting published, what shocked me the most of the process once you sign the contract and get to the real brass tacks of it is the emotional turmoil that I'm with.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, poetry, as everybody knows, of course, is to get something worked out. But so much of this stuff, as cliche as it sounds, was not meant to sell to somebody. It's literally me trying to work through something or come to terms with something or be happy about something or how I see a sunset, whatever. But to go back through with the editing process that I put into and learned with Gosley on Broken Eyes, I had to apply back to Whirling and not, you know, to change anything drastically from what I'm saying, but just from the man today, you know, how would I write this out? How would I bring this up to where Broken Eyes is, you know?
Right.
And you have to, what I found is that it's reopening all these things that you had put to bed, all these things that you did not have to do, but to be honest, you know, to be true to it, to make this a story worth telling, you know, you're going to do it. And it was just, and thinking about that for a year and a half, it was just that in doing it, it was just extremely raw and on edge and it showed my demeanor, but it's just, I just think, at least for me, you know, it's not like I'm saying this is what is going to happen to anybody who writes poetry, but it's just, it was a pouring out of everything. That by the end of it, there was, like I said, that relief and that catharsis. But it's mm-hmm. just still very, you know, it leaves you extremely weak.
Let's hear another poem from the book, please.
Okay. The next one I will read, it's called A Raven in Memoriam. It's from The Draw of Broken Eyes. A raven in memoriam, winged, earth-whipped, eyes too wide. A storm of cackles careens from barren trees. Chest, a muscle poured out. He is eaten with the rasping chant. I promise. I promise. I promise. Go onward into the city. Over the distracted crowd. Jump. Up. 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 Raven feathers glint and flitter like spastic, unwatched children. Plumage juts out of my elbows, spreads across the ribcage from my spine. This body's brutal allure is not healthy. It's to hide and attempting to ignore you, a tryst. Leave. The last Lady Chatterley's room was just churned up and hocked out, ready to make a place beneath my glossy breast for anything but another girl's hungry presence. I don't deny the gashed open heart is laughable, that the wicked end is sweeter. Over lips she slips to the edge of my ear. She tells me I sparkle, that I'm full of mercury. What are you thinking? How do you feel about me? I feel you should get out of my bed. I fear that my sticky pitch feathers will cling to you, litter the ground, lead you back to my clutch of earth where another isn't needed. Your teeth taste some dangerous life. I swear isn't here. A Raven in Memoriam.
Now, okay. This poem makes me think of many, many things, and the first thing that I think of is your background in classics. And I'm curious about the way you constructed this to just kind of weave a little bit of Poe into it, but not so much that that's all that's there. That's only a piece of what's
right.
There. How conscious of that were you when you did it? Or was that more part of the editing process, the cutting back of that, how did you know you got that part just right, I guess, is my question.
The poem itself, and there's another one called There Are Hours in Worldly Metaphysics, are two poems that are almost brother and sister in their construction and their deliberateness. They were latecomers to my composition process, and the fact that I had written them in part in the past, close to the same time, probably in 2007, and just at the last minute found them, and they did look very different, and the story I wanted to tell could so dangerously slip into something self-gratifying,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Yep.
But that poem is not to do that at all. When I wrote
right.
the poem, the feeling of that was a general idea of, and it comes with the dark moods of, you know, the black dog, as it were. But you know, and the feeling of I don't understand what you're attracted to.
Mm-hmm.
And that, again, is an idea that you know, oh, I'm going to get the right bike when I was 8 years old. You know, you've got to stay. It's being honest. It's being true. It's more of a disgust with myself, you know, and that's what I meant by, you know, an example of going back to that summer. I mean, really, there's no particular person involved. There is no one she. It's the feeling from this one summer living in Atlanta and Morgan Falls Station off of Roswell Road. maybe I'll get cheaper rent there if I move up there now. But when I was, there's so many things and periods that are very intense and short and blocks. And this is one of those poems that at the end of that summer that just came out of me. And so when I went back again, you know, like so many poems I write, it's in this burst. And then I'll save it sometimes and forget about it. And so when I come back, I've got to figure out where I was. But with that one, it didn't take me long at all. Once I read it, I was right back there. So it was carving that not to be. So much of it was also cryptic, like in my language, only what, you know, if you weren't me, you wouldn't know.
Right.
And to be honest, to not be cliche, that's where you've got to stand up and go, you know, sometimes I can be an ass. You know, sometimes I'm not the best guy to be around, you know, and not ask for pity for that. It's just part of the story. And that was something I focused on, not to go back to, you know, to explain some dark side of me, but if I'm going to actually do this and lay out the story, then it all needs to be there. And there was hesitation with that, and some poems were like, maybe I don't need to do this. But again, if you didn't, it's not going to be something that anybody wants to read or be a part of or spend money on. You know, it's just not.
It's not an easy thing to do, but you're making the craft of it. Sometimes can be a little distancing, but it doesn't serve to distance the reader, actually. I think it serves to embrace the reader in a little different way, the way you've composed it. And I think that's a good thing, actually, for you as a reader, as well as for you as a writer, as well as for any general reader to pick it up. I think it actually enhances that experience and doesn't feel so voyeuristic, you know?
Right. I agree.
In terms of when you write, how you write, and all the rest of that, do you sit down to write every single day? Does it happen like when the mood hits? Is it the kind of thing that you're disciplined about or very open to whenever it happens?
I mean, there's always spontaneous moments. I mean, that's why you've got your standard little, you know, black notebook with you and a pen to have those moments that you jot down. But for me, I mean, it is work, and you do set time aside, and you take it very seriously. Mm-hmm. I think what holds a lot of people back, and what held me back, these are things that I'm figuring out. I don't have answers, but, you know, it's that you do. It's for me, anyway, it was almost like, well, it's poetry. Okay, well, you know, it's quality enough to get some attention, but, you know, no, don't make that but. Don't do that and. You know, it's a job. So, yes, you like with the editing for my book, I've not written so much because it's sitting down going line by line by line and preparing for the second edition and getting everything in line, you know, going over those checks and balances and being very specific and taking time out of every day, no matter how, you know, tired you are, because it is a job. And, you know, I think that there's so many people that have made kind of light of it that I think many poets have got infected with that idea. I did for a long time. And it you know, it is a business. But for me to primarily write, and like now that I'm getting clear of the edits for the second edition, I feel that urge to write again. I've already started on a third book, but like it's the me on the other side of Broken Eyes where the sun is out and the flowers are out. So now I feel that surge again, and I can't wait to get home and back in my study where it's the one room that's almost looked the same since I was 25, you know, with all the artwork and books and things that I've collected. I mean, I can have a milk crate and a, you know, black and white TV outside and be fine with one bowl and a spoon, which is sad. But it's so sad for me to admit. But, you know, but the one room that I can come to that's it's really like a projection of what's inside my head. And that's not to brag, because as much as you'll find the, you know, Othello and works by Rick Bragg, you'll also find, you know, the Family Guy and Afro, you know, Samurai, and like, so I'm not bragging about that, but it's just it is about space for me. There are times that I'm outside that come to my study.
Well, you know, that you're answering a question that I was going to develop into the next question, but I think you kind of did that for me, so I don't want to like rehash it and all, but I think it's interesting that, you know, that space speaks to you or opens you up in such a way that you can hear what you need to write. I think that's kind of an awesome thing. And that you're still yet and still open to inspiration out when you're out and about in the world, that you can do both of those things. And I think that's kind of key to the whole process if you're really going to take it to a different level. What do you envision structurally for the new book? You know, is it going to be longer poems, shorter poems, different poems, or is it still evolving?
It's evolving, but it does have the backbone of what I've learned up to now, of course. So I'm very eager to write poems now, you know, right now, to see what comes out of me, and then the editing from that. The working title now is The Black Moon Creeps. There's an eagerness in it to see what's next. You know, and part of that in my personal life, and looking at the MFA programs and looking at the other side of things, now that you've got, you know, you've had that Dante's walk through a dark wood for a while, but I know that the Black Moon Creek really doesn't, isn't the title that evokes like sunshine, but it has a lot of also like Southern Old South fables that I've written actually back from college too, to kind of add the same undercurrent below the Mason-Dixon that all of my work has. Intentionally, it just always works its way in. I mean, as I talk of now, you know, I look at another part of my past that tells the same story, and that's this other set of poetry from, you know, a very unique childhood. So, I mean, I'm very excited about this book and to get more to it. So, I mean, again, this, you know, Eldon Porter, my publicist and best friend, has to remind me, like, look, you got to sleep, man. I was like, well, no, I got this novel. I've been working on it forever. It's 3 a.m, dude. I've got a baby, and my wife is going to she's gonna punch you in the face when she sees you next time. So we'll talk about this in the morning. There's a lot of good energy around me now, and I'm ready to get started on it.
And it's interesting what you say, that the Southern, there is such a Southern quality to your writing. And I don't want to refer to that as a motif or anything that trite, because it's not. It's part of your voice. It's just part of what you write. And it appears in imagery. It appears in language particularly. And it also appears in style. So I think that's good. I'm glad you mentioned that, because I think it's one of the things that works very well and runs nicely through your work. And I think that's encouraging to see that, you know, evolving along with everything else, a continuous theme. Even if you go off into other directions topic-wise, that will hold it all together as a body of work, I think, in a very, you know, it puts your imprimatur on it, and I think that's a good thing. You know, you've been doing some readings and promotional kind of things on the road. What's been the most fun thing about the readings themselves?
Honestly, reading aloud and practicing, you know, inflection and actually acting it out. I'm a huge fan of you know, Samuel Clemens, and I just, you know, just the stories I heard of him and you know, the Mark Twain, you know, to mm-hmm. capture some of that fire, you know, some of that fun, because there's so much here, and it's fun as much as it is sometimes. You know, I'll read a poem and I'm like, wow, man, I was really feeling awful right now, you know, but, you know, and feeling that bit, but still, well, then how do I say that? Mm-hmm. You know, that part of it has been a lot of fun. And then, you know, afterwards, having someone that you don't know, you know, that's not family, kind of indebted to buy your book, you know, be excited about it. And once you, you know, sign it and, you know, and like the first time, I don't think about it, but, you know, I want you to sign the book. I'm like, oh, I've done this. What do I do? You know, okay, what's your name? You know, and well, now what do I write? You know, do you want to sound, you know, snooty? I don't want to sound too friendly. What, you know, I never really thought about this part of it. It was always the writing, you know, so coming out on the other end, you know, it's doing the readings and then planning a tour schedule and then having dates and, you know, being reminded not to be late for things constantly, which I need to be. Yeah. Thank you, but you know, it's liberating, really. It truly is. I've enjoyed it immensely.
Where we can find the book? Where is the book available?
To really help out the press, I was, you know, to go to the Fjords Review, which is www.fjordsreview.com. You'll find that there. You can see the journal. All of it's there, and it keeps the money within the press and allows them, you know, they've got new books lined up, and it keeps the press going and the books coming out. But it can be found, and, you know, you'll be able to order it through Barnes & Noble and all of that.
We support independent press, so I would definitely encourage everyone to go to Fjord Review and check it out.
Thanks, absolutely.
Now, we are totally out of time, so I want you to finish with a third poem from the collection. And, let's do it.
Okay. This poem is called I Saw the Klan Today. Morning headed to bells. Klansmen haunted the courthouse. I was 8. Virginia seethed. Some folks like to live ugly. Her almond knuckles pale on the steering wheel. Our car sped up. She had wild eyes on those violent phantoms. And wedding white faces tight behind the bed sheet. They were chanting. Virginia patted my knee. Don't even look at him, baby. At home, I slept in her lap. She hummed, go tell it on the mountain. Praying, I grew into a man who witnessed wrong and became a blade against it. My mahogany mother squeezed me, smoothed my hair, sad at the state of our world. I saw the Klan today.
Now, you know, that's my all-time favorite of your work. So I'm so glad you read that one. It makes me very happy. It's such a visual piece. It's such an evocative piece. And it just speaks to so many different things. I think it's a really, really great poem. So thank you for that, Cliff. That made my day.
No problem. No problem.
So I urge you all, Fjord's Review, Charles Clifford Brooks III. The book is called Whirling Metaphysics. And... It's an interesting thing you're going to like, because you're going to hear the stuff that you've heard here tonight. You're going to see it in that book, but you're also going to see his very different piece in there as well. It's two books in one, and I think it's a must-read for anyone who's interested in the structure of poetry, the evolution of story, and just the different ways in which you can tell something without being limited by structure and space and time and all that other cool stuff that we like to limit ourselves with. I wish you all the best of luck with this book. I think it's going to be a great hit, and I can't wait to see the next one.
Thank you.
And if you want to give us an update on the next reading, anyone in your area might be able to go to, anything coming up that we need to know?
Right now there are being a lot of readings scheduled for the last week of June. John Gosley will actually be reading with me. We'll have those posted. They're still getting worked out now. We have a few, you know, a few leads and some put down on paper, but we'll actually have all that up soon. But the last week in June, if you're in the Athens or Atlanta area, there's going to be some exciting stuff going on.
Awesome. So I urge everyone to go hear these two men read together, because that, that would definitely be an awesome evening of poetry. And I want to thank you so much for taking time out of your night to spend time with us. And I will talk to you soon.
Yes, ma'am.
Thank you for listening in, and I hope you guys have a great weekend. I hope that you find inspiration in this and you write something. More importantly, that you pick up a book from an independent press like Gosley's book, Gosley's publication. Read Fjord's, read this book here, read the next book he's putting out, and make an independent publisher happy this weekend. Have a great night. Bye-bye.